Let me come back to Fog Allen again, because he called you a name.
Oh, yeah, glandular goon.
A glandular goon.
Goon, yeah. He would get his opposition out of a practice habit by the same type of snotty ridicule that he was giving me. We never played him for a couple of years. When finally did play him up at Lawrence, Mr. Ivor wouldn't let me finish the game, and they finished the game with four people.
Why didn't he let you finish playing?
Because we thought we got jobbed by the referees, by the fans, the whole attitude. Fog Allen was just needed a lesson, and we got beat.
So you played with four people?
Sure, yeah. They wouldn't let me play.
Henry Iba wouldn't let you play.
No, because my skills hadn't developed to the point where it was going to be nothing but embarrassment.
Well, couldn't he have somebody else take your place?
We didn't have any more guys on the bench. But when we got him in the national tournament playoffs in Kansas City, we whipped their butt. I was going to die before that happened. Fog Allen and I became good friends when we were on the Olympic team in 1952 in Helsinki. Fog Allen is an intelligent man.
Then, when you were a game at Oklahoma University, Coach Bruce Drake had a player take warm-up shots on stilts to embarrass you.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Drake had a guy, a football player, forgotten his name offhand, but he was a good football player, 6'6" or so. They made him a couple of basketball shoes and painted them. They added another 10 inches to him. So we go down to Norman to play, and they trot out this guy. I looked at him out of the corner of my eye, and I knew he was a phony. First place, he wasn't on the roster. And in second place, he looked pretty awkward on those boots. But anyway, we went back into the locker room, and Mr. Ivor had watched the same practice I had. He said, "Now, Bob, go out there tonight and knock down three shots. Just three, no more." He says, "Let's play with what we got." Well, we went out there, I knocked down the three shots. From then on, we had them. We gotcha. Because every time they shot the ball, my hand was in their face. They just couldn't shoot. They couldn't hit the basket.
So the no-block shot rule hadn't been in effect yet.
No.
That game, you defeated OU by the big score of 14-11.
I don't know if it was that game or the next game. Is when they took a man named Sinclair. He was the head of the rules committee for the NCAA, which is the governing body for sports. They nailed his chair up against the backboard or held it up there somehow. And he sat up there and he looked down.
A rules committee person sat above the basket.
That's right. And he looked down in there to see whether or not I was actually committing a foul by having my hand inside the cone of the basket. Now, they had decided all that in the previous year. And with the heat and the Saturday Evening Post and so forth. So it was a cut mustard time. You're either going to get in or get out. And so that's when they passed the rule and changed the game. Later, they came on when I was a junior or a senior, probably senior. And again, the rules were such that you didn't have to shoot the ball like you do today with the 35-second rule. You could dribble all night if you wanted to. You guys got to come get the ball. Well, that's when they passed the 35-second rule and changed the rules again. OU came up and sat on the ball with the idea that if they could get it down to, say, 10 to 9 or 11 to 12 or something like that, somebody would make a mistake and cause you to lose the ball and lose the game.
14-11. Did you, as a ball player, enjoy that kind of game?
No, I'll tell you why, because I think that year I was very close to being the scoring leader in the nation. With OU having the ability to sit on the ball, he took away from out of that particular game maybe 10 points. Hell, that was enough to be the scoring leader in the United States. And I didn't like that. Next year, we beat him pretty bad.